The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
You ever noticed anybody on the highway going slower than you is an idiot, and anybody going faster than you is a maniac? Dave Barry says, we all think, this is the truth of the human condition, we all think we are better than average drivers. When I mess up on the road, I apologize profusely. Of course, I get a little nervous about apologizing profusely because usually the windows are up and they can't read my lips and they're thinking I'm yelling or screaming or doing something, but I'm apologizing. I got to have to have a sign. Good to have you. Doctor Is In, 877-573-7825. Quickly getting down to business, 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to get onto the program. If you have multiple reasons, question about something in your life, it could run the gamut, not gambit. Gambit is an opening move. Gamut, it's a continuum. From little kids all the way up to 92-year-old great-grandparents. From social relationships and emotional struggles. The stuff of life that we all just kind of grapple with. Now, obviously, I'm a psychologist. I can't do therapy here. I'm not going to diagnose you. And I'm certainly not going to weigh in with any kind of thought if you're seeing somebody. That's just not appropriate whatsoever. However, we can give a few ideas, a few things, and hope the ripple effect takes place. Ripple effect is one small change in your life ripples out into many good changes. 877-57-EQUAL. You can also call with faith questions as they interplay with life and psychology, like that one. My most recent book is about that. You can call to help somebody else out. You're feeling pretty charitable. You can call to help me out. And if you disagree with me or if you think I was way off, well, if you think I was way off, you're way off. It's that simple. But, however, we will put you straight to the front. Because if I cannot explain or defend or come up with a rationale for why I said what I did, then I didn't really think it through all that much. I was just firing from the hip. Back when I was a young shrink, a shrinkling, I worked at a mental health center in Lisbon, Ohio. I began an internship there and went on to be a staff psychologist. I was in my 20s. I noticed that somehow I became the family guy, the parenting fella. And I probably gravitated towards that because that's really where you can get some quick changes in a family, work with the parents. I noticed, now this is 35 years ago, I noticed parents enveloped with insecurities, second-guessing, lack of authority, kids ruling them, kids running them. I was stunned. You know, I wasn't all that far from my own childhood. And I don't remember anything like my parents or my aunts or my uncles or my grandparents or my relatives or my friends just being so, so flummoxed by raising children. So, I decided I was going to write a book.
Yeah, you're right. Right, I'm going to write a book.
And it was going to focus on helping parents not to be so insecure, so tentative, so second-guessing, so neurotic about this. I wrote this book before I had children. I wrote this book, as I said, some 35 years ago, which is interesting because I knew a publisher was not going to buy a book written by a guy who had just gotten out of middle school. Nevertheless, the book was titled You're a Better Parent Than You Think. And it aimed at getting parents over some of their insecurities. Because the only people who buy parenting books are decent parents. Why? Who's going to buy a parenting book that says, yeah, I haven't fed them for a couple weeks. I'm starting to feel pretty neglectful. Let's go see if we can get a good parenting book. Well, somebody sent me this. It is typical. The media, the expert-driven, enlightened psychological theories and notions are everywhere. Parents absolutely swim in them. Swim in them. They wash over parents. This is a classic example of one. I would have said at one time it was extreme. It's not extreme. It's typical. No wonder even the smartest, brightest, most involved parents are flummoxed, insecure, guilt-ridden, can't control a kid. Here's the title. It's, by the way, it's from a very, very widespread and highly followed website. Six psychologically damaging things parents say to their kids without realizing it. Now, just look at the title. Psychologically damaging. You know, these are not just, they're not just uncool things to say. They're not slips of the tongue. They're not just dumb. Oh, no, no, no. They're psychologically damaging. And here's the kicker. You don't even know you're doing it. Do you realize that? You're messing your kid up. And you don't even know it. If I had to put together a whole bunch of ways interplaying to make parents nervous, neurotic, and second-guessing, and lack of authority, I couldn't do much better than something like this. Now, let me tell you, I don't have a whole lot of time. I'm just going to give you a couple of these to give you a taste of what they think are awful, psychologically damaging things that you unknowingly plant inside your child's little psyche. It's not a big deal. You are not supposed to say that, because to a child, it is a big deal. It's horrible. It's emotional. It's nerve-wracking. It's terrible. And you are to sympathize. And I assume that anything that even remotely says it's not a big deal, like, for example, it's okay. It's okay. You'll be all right. These kinds of things happen, and you'll find that you'll be able to feel better about it soon. No, you can't say anything like that. You have got to get within the child's upset. It doesn't matter if, for example, it's raining, and he wanted to go out and play, and he can't because it's raining. You have to commiserate with him. All right, I could go on. It says here, instead, try this. Take a moment and try to understand things from his perspective. You really seem scared or frustrated. Should we talk about it and figure out what to do? Okay, that's fine. I don't have any problems with that. Where I have my problem is the fact that because you said it's not a big deal, son, is awful and terrible. Now, here's one I agree with. Here's one I do agree with, and this is one I think that is not good for any relationship. You never or you always do. Yeah, but very few people never or always do something, but that's a good accusation. So I'm with him on that one. You make me sad when you do that. That's awful. That's emotional blackmail. You can't tell a child about your own feelings. You have to tell him about his feelings. You can't say, I'm disappointed in you, which I think would come under this umbrella. You can't say, I'm upset that you did that. No, whatever he did, you can't have an emotional reaction to, or you're going to psychologically damage him. Got it? You should know better. All right. I don't necessarily think that's the coolest thing to say to a kid. However, it isn't going to mess him up terribly when you say, you should know better not to pour chocolate milk in the toilet. You're 17. Now, here's one that I've done quite a few times. Quite a few times. And their rationale is, if you say something like this, you are implying all kinds of things that this poor kid is just, well, he's going to have material for his therapist, and he's going to be on an afternoon TV talk show talking about you someday. Let me do it. I can't tell you how many chores I've stepped in after my kid was spray painting something that he shouldn't be spray painting and said, here, let me do it. Okay, I'm bigger. I'm smarter. I've been around longer. I am older than my children. Maybe I can do it. It's okay. This is what they say you're telling your child. You're not capable of doing this. Maybe he's not. No, we wouldn't want to enter any kind of reality in any of this, would we? If the child's capable, yeah, you let him do it. But if you find out when he tries it and he starts it, he's not capable. I know my five-year-old, when he tried to change the oil on the car, I realized probably was above his skill level, and I said, let me do it. I didn't know I was setting him back. You're a blank. Yeah, okay. I can see that somewhat. Again, my argument is the psychological damage. You're a, what did you say? You're a slow mover, you're sluggish, I don't know what you would say. Yeah, generally personality labels aren't real good in any relationship. They're too broad and they arouse defensiveness. I got that part of it, okay? But these six things, all right, you want another one? Here's another one. They said this. Even labels that seem positive, like you're smart, can actually be harmful. Are you people realizing you better monitor every word you say with these kids? You better be careful. You better not be human. When you say you're smart or you're athletic, we're telling our child, the only reason you did well on that test is because you were born brainy. That's not what I'm telling him. I'm telling him you're smart. You did well. About five books ago, I wrote a book called Advice Worth Ignoring. Now, we could debate the title. But it was 50 ways that the experts do this kind of stuff to parents. And that was one of them. You are not to tell a child. You are not to give positive to a child. Because if you do, you're telling the child he's only valuable because he's a good athlete. If I say to my kid, tell you what, you are one nice shortstop. Wrong. Wrong. Because I'm saying, well, the only reason I love you is because you can play short. I'm not saying any such thing. But you got to have a mind of an expert to take this stuff and twist it so far out of shape. No wonder parents are just so second-guessing and in many cases neurotic about the whole child-rearing thing. You folks just better watch how you talk.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Mississippi presented a brief to the Supreme Court, and in that brief, the state of Mississippi argued that the Constitution of the United States does not confer a right to abortion, asking the court to finally admit that cases claiming there is such a right, Roe v. Wade, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, have been wrongly decided and need to be overruled. Now, make no mistake, this is coming to a very different Supreme Court than we've had in the past, because former President Trump kept his promise to appoint originalist judges. And even if we assume they regard Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey as bad decisions, we really don't know how they might go about revising, dismantling, you know, reforming Roe. This is going to be a very consequential Supreme Court case.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta. 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book
Jesus, the master psychologist, listen to him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live. Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of the doctor is in. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. I usually walk into a room, and half the time I don't remember why. But for some reason, I think there's going to be a clue in the refrigerator. I just walk over the fridge and open up the fridge, thinking, this must have been the reason I walked in here. Which is really difficult when I'm walking into the bedroom or the bathroom. Aaron from New York is doing something that is now at an all-time high for grandparents. Sometimes it happens because of the tragic death of a parent, but far more often it happens because of the irresponsible lifestyle of the parent. Hi, Aaron.
Hello, doctor.
How did you come about getting custody of your granddaughter?
Well, the state of California decided that our daughter was not fit to raise her child. So that was about 3 years ago, because of neglect or abuse. And, of course, it wasn't her fault, but no one can figure out whose fault it was. And so we've had our granddaughter for about 3 years. The adoption just went through in March. Originally, we had adopted her mother at 5 years old. Because of the same thing. And now we've adopted the granddaughter, and, you know, it's just pretty, complicated.
How old was the granddaughter when she came to live with you, Aaron?
She was just a little over one.
Okay. Did at the time that your daughter was declared unfit, were there drugs and alcohol involved?
Oh, yeah. There was, she was in rehab when she got pregnant. She was clean for a while. And then after the baby was born, she was headed back that way again.
Do you know if she was clean during her pregnancy?
Yes. Yes.
You know that for sure? You can, that's a definite?
Yeah. She was in a facility, unwed mother's facility that they did, testing all the time.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's really good. That's really, really good, Aaron. Yeah. And the reason that's really, really good is because I know you're asking for what book I have that would help you, and I will suggest one. But I think even more important is the fact that in the womb, your little granddaughter was not bathed in toxins. The
right.
damage that does to the little developing brain is almost incalculable. She is now what, four?
She's four.
Four. Is she a behavior problem?
No, not really. She's a lovely little girl, very loving.
Wonderful.
This is honestly, when we look at her, we're thinking, this is the little girl we thought we were adopting the first time.
Well, and, adopting her at five, especially with a turbulent history, you saw how that unfolded.
Yeah, sure did.
Well, I have a book that is by far my most popular parenting book. It's called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime.
All right.
It's been a big seller for years now. It is 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked ages 2 to 18. So I would say probably about 30 or 40 of those questions right now are most relevant to you and where your little granddaughter is developmentally.
Okay? All right.
But as she grows up, more and more questions become relevant. It's on my website, drray.com. There's also a book on adoption there. There's also a book on grandparenting there. But I think the one that would actually aim closest to saying, okay, look, we got a beautiful little granddaughter here. We want to keep it that way.
Right.
That would be the one. Now, if you're only going to buy one. Now, of course, I'm going to tell you, Aaron, if you only buy one, you're going to have psychological holes. You are. There's no way around it. And you're going to call me 3 years from now. You're going to say,
I already have psychological
well,
holes.
Don't say I didn't warn you. I appreciate it, my friend. God bless you.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right, God bless
I'll talk
you.
To
Thank
you. Bye. Bye. Yes, Rick is, I got Rick's email. And Rick, you are about, I'm going to say 10%. You're about 10% of the folks who email me, and I ask in certain situations, can you please call the show? I'd like to ask some questions about this. And about 10% do. So you are in that elite group. Hi, Rick.
Hi, sir. How are you?
Thanks for the call. Is this your only son, 4 years old, more, one, two, three, five?
No, he is, excuse me, he is number three of four.
Okay.
He has two older siblings.
Is this his number one problem? Sorry.
I would say yes. He's a typical 4 year old and fights with his siblings.
You didn't get that, did you, Rick? You didn't get that. You'd rather have it be a number one problem than a number two problem.
Uh-huh.
All right. Hey, come on. You didn't pay for this. I'm not giving you my best stuff. So, how long has he been avoiding the toilet and finding other places?
I would probably say around 6 months.
Whoa!
It's not consistent.
Does it happen when he's mad at you?
He will get up in the morning before anybody's up, and instead of going to the bathroom, will find some place sometimes.
Oh, jeez. So he's secretive about this, huh?
Yes.
Have you pinpointed anything about getting up in the morning? Is he afraid to go downstairs by himself? Is it dark? What do you think? See any pattern?
Not that I'm aware of. If it's just something he says it's too far, however, it's just down the hall, and it's not like it's dark or anything along those lines. So
you know, he's messing far. Himself up, Rick. He really is, and I'll tell you why. What is he going to tell his kids? You know, he can't say I walked to school 6 miles. He'll say, you know, I had to walk 12 feet to the bathroom when I was a boy. It's the way it was. And I was grateful. Okay. So would you say that 60%, 70%, 80% is morning?
I guess that's difficult because we don't always
catch him.
I would probably say we probably have 80% success, 90% success. It's just the fact that when we do find it, obviously it's very disheartening and disappointing.
Yeah, okay. I can't get inside that little guy's mind. Probably, even if you and your wife paid really close attention, he's 4 years old. His lack of insight is normal. So you're not going to be able to figure out why is he doing this. And if we could figure out why he's doing this, we could fix it and correct it because we would change the why. Has that gone through your head?
Well, anything that we could do to help. Yeah.
Oh, I got that stuff. The problem is I don't know the why. Okay. Now, little kids do all kinds of squirrely stuff, and you can't figure it out, and they don't even know. It's just something. He gave you his best answer. It's a long walk to the bathroom, Dad. Can you get me a golf cart or something? Stay right there, Rick. I gotta ponder this. But you see, right now, all the words I used would have taken me 2.5 hours to type.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can my whole self to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What is God's most amazing quality? Surely it must be his enormous mercy towards sinners. This mercy is revealed in the gospel through Jesus Christ. Jesus' very name means salvation from sin. The Eucharist is the sacrament of redemption, we learn from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. In order to receive this mercy, however, we must know and acknowledge that we indeed have sinned and are in need of forgiveness. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, St. John's Gospel reminds us. But if we confess our sins, God will cleanse us of all unrighteousness. John Paul II asserted that conversion requires convincing of sin. As a physician must probe a wound before treating it, God, through his word and his spirit, casts a living light on sin. But along with the sting of conscience comes the salve of the certainty of redemption. So the Spirit of Truth is also the Consoler. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Tried to walk into Target last night, do some shopping, but I missed. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. A. Number to get onto the program, 877-573-7825. Typically what happens is about halfway mark in the program, people realize that they can still call in because they don't have to get in line. Now, there is no line. It's simple. It's a matter of, if you have a question, depending upon the question, depending upon whether we've had that within the last 8 months, whatever, there's a lot of reasons. So not unusually, you can call in later in the show and have a pretty close to an equal chance of getting on. Now, I'm talking to Rick. He's got a little four-year-old guy. About 10-20% of the time, this little guy decides the toilet is just too much of an inconvenience. Now, fortunately, this is his number one expression and not his number two expression. And Rick and I were talking a little bit. Actually, I was doing most of the talking, but Rick was patiently listening about why this might be. Why does this little guy every so often, sporadically, just decide to, I don't want to use that big white thing. You still there, Rick?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, you said, I think in your email, if I remembered, you said that you've done the physical stuff and there's nothing that came to light, right?
We're working through some things with this doctor, but at this point, it doesn't look like there's anything physiological that would be causing it.
Yeah, and I would suspect not, given the hit and miss, bad choice of words, sorry about that, given the sporadic nature of this. Now, if you wish, you might pay closer attention, and this is just more of an academic exercise, pay more attention to what, if anything, happened in the immediate before context of this. For example, let's say that he didn't go to potty before he went to bed. He just said, I don't have to. I don't have to go potty. All right. But prior to that, maybe within the 2 hours prior to that, he had something to drink. So he gets up, and he really has to go to the bathroom. And he's right. That toilet is, 12, 15 feet away. You can't expect me to walk all that distance, Dad. So that's one thing you could look at, and that might take away some of the possibilities. But here's what I would suggest. This is a quasi-discipline problem. In other words, it looks like this is weird. You know, he's not defiant. He's not throwing fits. What is this? And this is kind of a leftover carryover from Sigmund Freud. You know, Freud put a whole lot of weight on potty training. And if, in fact, potty training didn't go right, that meant you're going to have all kinds of problems as a grown-up. Now, most people don't buy into Freud's theory anymore. They're not even aware of it. However, those ideas linger. They reverberate. And so parents are more nervous about setting a standard regarding potty training. If it were me, I would tell your little guy something like this. You know, if you're a big boy. Oh, wait a minute, Rick. I don't know if you heard my monologue, but you're not allowed to say that.
Sure, I did.
You're not allowed to say that. You can psychologically scar your kid. But if you want to take that chance, you can say, you know what, son? You're a big boy. And you know how to use a potty. So when you don't, when you go anyplace else other than the potty, mommy and I are going to say no to a whole bunch of things that you ask for. So, for example, you get up in the morning and, yeah, you know, there it is. You don't have a dog. Obviously, it's him. So he comes and he says, I got my juice cup, Mom. Oh, honey, no, you're just going to get a plain plastic cup. You're not getting your juice cup. You didn't go on the potty, went on the carpet. Mom, it's nine. He probably can't tell time yet, but he says, Mom, it's time for Umizoomi. No, honey, you don't get Umizoomi. You know, you didn't go on the potty. In other words, what you're going to do is you're going to remind him that these things, these several things that you take for granted are not allowed because what you did. If in fact, Rick, your little guy is just of an attitude of, I don't feel like it, and this is a better way to do it. Okay. If that's his attitude, then this will clear this baby up within, a couple of days, to tell you the truth. All right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, if there's something that is unique to morning or unique to bladder control, which I don't think so, but if it is, it could take a little while longer because he's going to have to exert a little more control. But if it's just a matter of, I've been off and on doing this for 6 months and I'm in the habit. Have you or your wife done any kind of disciplining about this in the 6 months?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What have you done?
He likes Thomas the Tank Engine, and so that stuff went away, and so then it improved for a while, and then we thought we cleared it up, and then he'd have a relapse, or we'd catch him someplace else. And
here's why that didn't work. He likes Thomas the Tank Engine, so you took Thomas the Tank Engine. Now the average 4-year-old has 755 activities he can use and play and do. You took the favorite. So you did scrape the icing off the top of his cake, but he still got the whole cake left. And you're right. When he responded briefly, it was, whoa, okay, I want my Thomas. I'm not going to do that. But then as we're all human and he's human, he slipped back. That happens all the time. I get clients in my office all the time saying, we did that and it got better for a while and then it just went back. And I said, well, what you did is you underestimated the price tag. Price tag, if you just took one privilege away, he's a 4-year-old, he'll find something else. It won't really be that impactful. That's why I said use the multi-consequence approach.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Let me know.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thanks, Rick. I got to go to your calls right after this break. The interesting thing about this is that somebody listening thinks, well, I can't relate to a toilet problem. Yeah, but if you notice, what I want to do is I want to take the toilet training problem and broaden it into principles that would adhere to a range of situations. Like, for example, when I made the point that you take away a child's favorite privilege, and yeah, it may work for a little, but they adjust. They adjust to it. Why? Because the average kid has so much in the way of options and goodies and materialism and perks and activities that even if you take away the big boomer, there's still a whole bunch of stuff left. 877-57-EQUAL.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I never cease to wonder at is that this Jesus, Son of God, came born in a stable, escapes from a king. And his whole life he's kind of hunted down by the jealousy and the ambition of the scribes and Pharisees and the king. And he speaks and heals to the people. He raises the dead and exorcises the demons. Nobody's grateful. He does all that. He continues to do all of that. And we still don't understand how much he loves us. Isn't that odd?
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is The Logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, "Appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. There are a lot of things we can't not know. Take gravity, for instance. When you put your foot down, it stays there, unless your spouse pulls out the rug you're standing on. Gravity is not just a good idea, of course. It's the law, a natural law. And you can't change natural laws. They are what keeps the universe in order. For instance, gravity reminds you not to step off a cliff without suffering painful and life-threatening consequences. Ah, law and order. Something to appreciate. Today, tell someone you appreciate God's laws and His order that keeps you grounded. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
I had a revelation last night. I had gotten into a very bad habit in my swing in softball, and I was just basically beating the ball into the ground, hitting dribblers in the infield, and I thought to myself, that could be the sign it's time to hang them up. But then I made an adjustment that is just, it was a fundamental adjustment, and I had gotten unconscious about doing the bad stuff. Made all the difference in the world. So now I'm set to play again. My poor wife, she thought, okay, Ray. She's supportive. She says, oh, Ray, come on, you can hit. You're still strong enough to hit. I go, I don't know, honey. It's just that maybe the bat speed just isn't there anymore. Well, it isn't there, but at least it should be there enough to hit the ball halfway decent. I'm not going to blast it one hop the fence anymore. Okay, anyway, Teresa from Columbus, Ohio. That's St. Gabriel Radio, I think, down in that area. Hi, Teresa. How are you?
Well, hello, Dr. Ray.
We were talking a little bit, Andrew and I. Your call prompted this. We were wondering what percentage of grandparents call about a grandchild versus parents calling about a child.
A lot.
I think so. I think you're right. I would have to say that. I would have to say that maybe the grandparents got the edge. You're concerned about this little guy, huh?
Yes, yes. Hmm. He showed signs in preschool of a little bit of anxiety, and it's hereditary, right? It's genetic. My husband and I, even his mother, had tics at periodically different times of their life. And his started younger. It seems to last longer. It's not constant.
What kind of tics, Teresa? Facial tics?
Well, yeah, it's all, yeah, coming from there. Like the first one in preschool was like rolling up the eyes. It scared him so bad. They thought he had brain problems. It was rolling his eyes clear up where you couldn't even see it clear up. And he did that clear up to his, to where I didn't think that was possible. He did that for a while in preschool, four. And then now he's six. I'm not quite sure what he had in between, but now they're worried because he's doing that breathing, doing that
sniffing, the unconscious
sniffing constantly. And that, it's constant more when he's at rest than it is when he's busy. He's fine, but when it's like. But it's been going on now for, at the end of the school year, they think it was because there was a bully in the class. But it's continued on to the summer. And it's been going on, I would say, a good 3 months.
Have they been to a neurologist?
No.
First place to go.
Just the pediatrician. Just the pediatrician. No other specialty.
First place to go. Here's why. If you have a child who is predisposed to having certain kinds of involuntary movements, mostly they surround the face, and it's a neurological situation. People tend to interpret it psychologically, and there is a psychological component in that. If the child is tired, or he's stressed, or anything that might alter his existence and start in a new little classroom, those can kick up. However, if the tic, and the tics are most likely involuntary. And so this is the eyebrow. I had a son who did that. He outgrew it in adolescence, but he had a number of those kinds of mannerisms. One of the things that the neurologist will look for is something called Tourette's syndrome. Okay, are you familiar with Tourette's?
Yeah, I've heard of it, that's all.
Well, in the extreme, Tourette's can manifest itself with vocal outbursts, sometimes cursing. But more often than not, Tourette's is confined to facial tics. Not the only kind of tics, but the predominant ones. So if your little guy... I'm sorry?
Is it hereditary?
I'm not familiar with any actual research. However, it's safe to say that if his mother or one or both of his parents had a similar developmental issue, then he's more likely to have that issue. That's safe to say. Now, the good news is that the neurologist might say, well, we're going to give him a low dose of a particular medication, and that should dampen the tics. That's good. That would be good. It's not anything that would be bad. It would be a healthy move. Especially as you describe these tics to the neurologist. You know, the eye rolling one. I mean, this is not something that a kid does voluntarily. You just don't take your eyes and shoot them so far up you almost disappear and you see nothing but the whites of the eyes. That's especially a little preschooler, that's involuntary, in my opinion. Can't diagnose it from here. That's why you go to the neurologist. But that's the first step. You tell the neurologist this is what's going on. If your little guy has kind of an anxious temperament, I mean, he's the kind of kid, he's a little bit of a fretter. He kind of gets unsure of himself in certain situations. If that's who he is, if that's the way he's wired, then your daughter or son, whoever child this is going to keep an eye out for those situations, help him navigate them, have him get through them, I know my one son avoided certain situations, and we allowed him because we judged that that situation wasn't all that necessary for his well-being. That if he didn't want to do that, we're not going to involve that. But there were others that he had to. And fortunately, he's a very well-adjusted young man today. And that was just something that he moved through when he was in his 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years of age. That's the direction I'd go, Teresa.
All right. Okay, all right, thank you, Dr. Ray.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
I'm Dr. Ray. When we come back, Chris, that's an interesting question there. And there's a psychological answer to that is maybe yes and maybe no. I strive to be definitive.
We don't have a lot of time on this earth. We weren't meant to spend it this way.
The doctor is in.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament, with the goal of 1 hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarini, Monday through Friday. Doctor Is In, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Website, drray.com, drray.com. All the books are there. Facebook page, a lot of stuff put up by my wonderful Facebook manager, Katie, who is top-notch professional. Chris, Orange County, California. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Doctor.
So you phrase the question. I don't want to phrase it. You phrase it.
Do you think that if you're trying to live a good Catholic life, you would know when it comes time for your confession, whenever it is, every 2 or 3 weeks, that you would be aware because you would have had all these venial sins that would have made themselves aware in your examination of conscience? Or rather, do you think that when you commit a venial sin, do you automatically know, yes, I've done something?
Good news and bad news. The bad news is, the more faithfully you're trying to be a good disciple, the more likely you'll be aware of ways that you fall short. One of the problems is that if you don't pay much attention to how you live and act, you'll just ignore it and you'll just think you're a wonderful human being who doesn't do a whole lot ever wrong. But the more you try to live like Christ wants you to live, the more you notice what you could make better and what you did wrong. Okay, that's the bad news. The good news is that doesn't mean God loves you any less, and it doesn't mean you're a more wretched human being. It simply means you are becoming more aware of the things that you do that you didn't notice before. Now, your question about confessing them. Now, this is tricky turf, but confession is for serious, grievous sins. Venial sins are forgiven at the penitential rite when you say, "Lord, I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof," before communion. Forgives all venial sins. They're gone. They're gone. That means you don't have to confess them. Now, most people do. Most people go to confession and say, "Well, yeah, I don't necessarily, I'm not aware of any major stuff, but let me tell you about my self-centeredness. Let me tell you that I gossiped. Let me tell you that I lost my temper. Let me tell you that I was not fair to another person." Whatever it was. Most people do confess the bulk of their sins, especially people who go to confession regularly. They do confess a whole bunch of venial sins, which is okay, but those sins have already technically been forgiven. So, what you got to be careful of, and I'm reading between your lines here, is you don't get scrupulous. In other words, you don't live in agony over the ways you sin. You recognize it. You're sorry for it. You're going to ask God to help you do better. And you have peace and joy. You don't say, "Oh my gosh, these venial sins are coming at me so fast I can't keep track of all of them. How am I going to remember them all to say them in confession? This is awful." You get like that, and your faith just becomes a burden, becomes a stone on your shoulders, and it is not freeing, and it is not giving you peace, both of which Christ said you're supposed to have. So he must know what he's talking about. The more I get older, Chris, the more I'm aware of things that I do wrong. That's good. I want to be aware of them. However, I don't want the cumulative weight of them to bring me down. I want to still be happy and peaceful in my Christian walk, and recognizing that, yeah, I do these things, and I'm working on it, and this is good. This is a progress. That's what you want. So how's that for a lecture for you? Did I overwhelm you? Maybe Chris isn't even there anymore. Chris, did you leave me? He did. Andrew, Chris is gone. Now, there's one of two explanations for this. Maybe more, but the two that I can think of. One, his cell phone dropped. Two, at some point in my rambling monologue, I said something that didn't sit well. I'm used to that. Our Lord says, take the log out of your own eye before you try to take a speck out of somebody else's eye. Well, the implication is we have logs in our eyes. It's not just a matter of, okay, I'm going to do this so I can correct you better. Well, no, the first step is you got to be a little more insightful about yourself. Notice he used a log, too. I mean, if you want to compare here, I got the log and you got the speck. That makes you a lot less repetitively sinful than I am. I don't like that thought. But our Lord apparently says it is more important for you to recognize yourself. That's the only way you can get closer to me. Priests have told me that people will come into confession and say, Father, I can't really think of any sins to tell you. Well, now right there, there's a sin. The sin of pride. Spiritual fluffiness. Right there. And when somebody tells you, "I don't really think of anything that I can tell you," that means they ain't thinking. They're not soul searching. People don't like to soul search. You don't You don't want to see what you might see. But that's the only way to get closer to our Lord. And it shouldn't destroy your peace. Thanks for joining me. I'm Dr. Ray. I appreciate it so very much. I had a crew check for all you do over at that end in Ave Maria Land and EWTN, Global Catholic Radio. Good people. Walk with God. And even if you commit a whole lot of venial sins, he's not going to walk away. Only you can make him walk away with the big stuff. I'm Dr. Ray.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.